number threes. Take a pull up off the wood and let that motherfucker breathe. Sit outside of Buster crib and let that motherfucker leave. Walk his ass back in and put him on his motherfucking knees. Thug, never taking no for an answer. Might just take a loss, but bitch, I'd rather take my chances. This liquor got me lurking where you live at in the nighttime. 5950 to the left, but I'm in my right mind. Thug, pants gon' be sagging till I'm 40. Still lyrically sharper than these show bus shorties. These phonies ain't gon' throw me in this minstrel show. These labels see how far up in their mouth my dick could go. So gon' choke on this meat, throw my song on repeat. Might move away one day, but I'm always gon' belong to the streets. So straight thug, and it feels so good, and it feels so right, yeah, and it feels so good, and it feels so right. Cause motherfucker, I'm thug, telling you the signs of the street rap. Every motherfucking show I do is off the meat rap. I done been in jail and did my best not to repeat that. I'm trying to feed my family, give a fuck about your feedback. Critically acclaimed, but that shit don't mean a thing. When you rocking mics and still in microwaves, cooking cane, never tricking on the dame. I'm too cold for you broke hoes. Don't let the knob pinch your booty when the door closed, bitch. She let me hit it cause I'm thug. The squares need not apply, I'm so fly.
So, I'm kind of embarrassed of our region here, man.
You're embarrassed of our region?
I am.
What is this?
So, I don't think it's any secret anymore that we're in the undisclosed location in Northern California. We get this rainstorm, and, like, everyone can't, no one can do anything.
They can't hump?
Can't get out the building. Maybe humping's about the only thing that people can do right now. Every class I got, you know, like four kids didn't show up to school because it rained. Getting emails from the high school about, oh, we're going to still be open tomorrow. You know, braving through the rain. Come on, man. Rain? Talk about rain. You know, not snow. Not a blizzard. That people get locked in their house for like 7 days over in Buffalo or anywhere in the Midwest where they get rain or they get snow, and it's like they got like 15, 30 inches of snow. They can't get out the house to get to work. I understand that. But, I mean, come on, dude. Rain? I'm here. I got here.
Yeah.
Through the so-called storm of the century at 9 o'clock through like 5.5 beers. All right? I'm here. I'm ready to get stoned.
I think the problem is, why did you have 5.5 beers for? You just putting them away, huh?
Yeah, well, I did start at
like... During affected you that much?
It did. Well, I started at like 3 because, you know, we got out early.
Because of the rain?
Nah, we're always out early. But, we'll always get out early on a Thursday. But they did cancel the staff meeting, so I will give the rain that much. It got me out of a staff meeting.
And you're teaching
But children. I was down.
You're teaching the children and you're drinking like five and a half beers and then you go to work the next day or what?
Yeah.
Do you slap some kids around and stuff?
I mean, whatever needs to be done.
I think you need help, dude.
Whatever needs to be done.
Whatever needs to be done. I think you need to go to some...
I didn't strike anyone today, how's that?
Okay. Look what you made me do, kid. Hey, yo, give me that, kid. So what do you want to talk about today? Besides the rain.
Well, I think we...
Here's the other thing. I drove in the rain. Because my job, I have to drive.
Right.
And I'm glad I missed. There was like some flooding, and I missed it probably about like a half an hour. There was a point today where I didn't have a jacket on, you know, and then I was like, oh, I guess it's raining like semi hard, so I guess I better put my jacket on.
Were you not aware that the storm of the century was happening?
I knew the storm of the century was happening, but like you said, I mean, when you're talking about like I never 15 inches of snow, but you know, I think I've been in like 5 or 6 inches of snow, and I'd try, you know, me, the person I am, I'd try to drive to work, and I couldn't even get out of my driveway. Like, I literally couldn't get out of my driveway. I couldn't even go down the street. I think I went down the street, but I was like, oh, there's no way I'm going to be able to drive to Denver or whatever it is. And so I called my boss. I'm like, hey, I can't even get out of my little cul-de-sac, whatever it's called, right? And she's like, don't you live by this guy? I'm like, yeah, I live by that guy. And she's like, well, why don't you stay on the corner and he'll come pick you up? And I was like, listen, man, I'm like, I'll put my own life in my hands. I said, but I'm not going to put someone else, you know, have someone else with my life in their hands. I'm like, I think I'll just stay home today, you know. But, yeah, there's a lot of water. You maybe had to drive about, during the rough of it, you probably had to drive about 45 to 50 on the freeway. And a lot of water on the freeway and stuff. Went under a bridge, there's a lot of water there. My little battery light went on because too much water hit the battery or whatever, but, you know.
But you made it through.
But I made it through. I'm here, yeah.
Yeah. I'm calling out every kid that shows up on Monday. They had to miss Thursday and Friday because it rained too hard. I'm just straight up calling them out.
But
I'm going Professor X on them.
Yeah.
Sissy.
I don't think anybody knows who Professor X is. Yeah, listen to this podcast, but it's okay. So, what do you want to talk about here? Because I don't know if I want to talk about Raw per se, but I mean, is there anything like wrestling in general that we can talk about? Maybe some other things that while you're drinking your 5.5. What happened to the other half of the beer?
It's waiting.
You poured it in your shoe or something?
Nah, it's waiting. Yeah.
It's not in your shoe right now that you're drinking out of your shoe?
Nah, I'm not going Das Boot over here. It's just, this is there. Just wait.
It's there. Is it in the refrigerator or in the freezer?
Neither one.
Neither one? It's just hanging outside?
Yeah.
It's fermenting in the rain?
it's like the large professor. I'll drop another reference no one gets. It's you, just hanging out.
What's up with you and the professors today, dude?
I don't know. Hey, you're setting me up. You set me up. You know, whatever direction the show goes in.
And you knock him down.
I'm ready to go.
You knock him down, right? Okay. Right. Well, I was kind of trying to lean on you, but, you know. Leading up to the whole TLC and stuff, it's the same stuff over and over. So, I guess we could talk about the Slammies, but I don't know if I really want to.
I'll start off with the Slammies. Okay. That's fine. I'm not going to talk about too much, but, I mean, I think the thing that was probably the most controversial thing to me, aside from the fact that,
it was raining.
Somehow John Cena still gets nominated for Wrestler of the Year when he really doesn't do anything. But I think it's just in the contract that he has to get nominated every year. Roman Reigns winning it. I mean, I think that at the time when Reigns left, he was definitely on pace to be the guy. You know, I wouldn't have had any issue. And I think, you know, ability-wise, he's right up there. But I mean, you lose, like, 5 months out of a year, in a year when, like, Rollins really broke out, Ambrose really came on his own when Reigns went down, you know, like, Daniel Bryan had a great year, but, you know, he missed half a year as well. So I'm not saying I have a problem with Reigns winning, you know, Superstar of the Year, but it's just kind of surprising to me. And then you put that against Randy Orton, who... You know, Randy Orton is what he is. He's not billed to be as far as like this all-time legendary kind of guy. I mean, but you hold the title for most of the year like Orton did, and you're the guy that kind of reunifies the belt, and you don't even get nominated to be Superstar of the Year. I thought that was kind of weird. I'm not saying Orton necessarily should have been the winner of it. But I think he should get some kind of nod because he really carried the program for the storylines at least for quite a while. And I don't know, I like Reigns. You know, don't get me wrong. If Reigns had made it all the way through the year and been doing what he was doing, then all by all means. But I don't know, it's just kind of weird to me that you can miss that much time and still be the Superstar of the Year.
Do you think? I mean, well, the other problem I have with the Slammies too is that some of the voting seemed legit, and then there's certain parts that didn't seem too legit. I just did a MC Hammer, didn't I? Or
to quit?
The funky headhunter? He's a funky headhunter now, right?
He's that guy too. I think he's just Hammer these days.
Hammer?
Yeah. I don't know if he's still
what on about, MC. What about Hammer? Oh, that's you.
Oh.
Yeah.
No. No. Good.
You're good.
I'm hurt.
But, you know, he was there. At the, you know, he was there to accept the award and stuff. So it just kind of seems to me that, you know, they're using the Slammies as a tool to kind of usher him coming back in. But you bring up a good point about Orton. Obviously, the name of the award wasn't Worker of the Year because he was basically he did a lot of the work, and I think Randy Orton for certain parts really gets overlooked in terms of the work that he does, and a lot of it's because people generally don't like him, you know, but at the same time, but over a course of him doing what he does, how is he different from, say, like a a Ric Flair or like a Terry Funk, you know, guys that, you know, nobody really likes, but they get the job done and they're the ultimate heel in terms of nobody likes them. I mean, where would you put Randy Orton right now in his stage of his career?
I mean, I think he's on the back end.
You like, you like how I did that, right? How we started talking about the slamming, so I was able to turn into something else. Into something totally different.
Didn't I start the subject? I think he's on the back end of his prime. I think he still has quite a bit of good years. But he's still kind of a product of what WWE is, right? Kind of like micromanaging what they want their stars to be. When you got a guy like Randy Orton that you can just kind of let him go and do what he's going to do, especially as a heel. Like it's like you make this guy be a babyface, which he didn't really want to do for so many years. And then you finally give him what he wants, which is give him a heel run and the belt. But instead of letting him be kind of like this headline star that he really should be, and that they kind of try to build him up to be, you're going to go and let like Triple H talk for him all the time. And make him kind of like the second fiddle in the storyline that you're doing, because you got to get Triple H and Stephanie over somehow. Like you're just hampering your own guys again, and that's kind of the thing that sucks with the way that they treat Orton. I think I think he can do so much more than they let him do. He can be the Stone Cold of this generation.
In what way?
Just in terms of work, in terms of being a great character that you don't have to force him to be bad or force him to be good.
But he doesn't have the chops that Stone Cold.
He's not as good as Stone Cold. I'm not trying to say that, but in terms of like this great character that he can just be who he is, and people will like him at a given time or dislike him at a given time, because it's only about a 5% change from when he goes to a heel or a face or back and forth. But they're trying too hard to kind of like say, okay, Randy Orton's got to be a heel now, so we have to go out of our way to do something different to make everybody hate him. And we're not really gonna let him make himself a hateable guy. We'll just have Triple H get all his heat for him. Or now he's a babyface, so you know we still want to have him kind of have that attitude that he does, but they just kind of like take away his killer instinct.
They put him in roles where, okay, he has to be a face or he has to be a heel, but they never let him explore either one.
Right.
They never put him on his own, which you're kind of saying about Triple H and and McMahon and all that, Stephanie McMahon and all that stuff and everything. So I wouldn't say that the jury's out on him, because I don't think he's ever going to have a jury for him. I don't think he's ever going to be able. They're never going to give him a spot where he can really explore being a heel by himself and really stand on his own. And I don't know if that's WWE's fault, or I don't know if that is Randy Orton's fault. You know, like one thing, you know, we talked about last week with McMahon saying that, like, the millennials, you know, they're a different breed. But we were talking about this with Dolph Ziggler, too. Like, you know, we were saying, like, you know, Dolph has to barge into Vince's office and say, hey, like, I'm the man. I'm going to be the man, and, you know, you're going to follow me or whatever. And, you know, because we kind of go, I always go back to, you know, Shawn Michaels did that. A couple other people have done that. And you made up a good point way back when, saying, like, you don't think the WWE is that way anymore. It's not that type of environment where you can have a cowboy, so to speak, say, you know, like, you know, I'm going to do what I want to do, and you're going to follow me. I think Randy Orton is very easy to put in a box by WWE, and they're just writing it out. And I think it's just a bigger problem to the whole kind of thing. I think Roman Reigns being out has really hurt the product, because here it is, you have a guy that they put him in a role and he has such natural charisma that he can carry that role and it doesn't seem forced too much. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And you really don't have, I don't think there's really anybody on the roster that has like a natural charisma where not only do they have that charisma, but they can back it up in the ring and they can back it up just as an overall performer. And I really don't see anybody like that right now. You had that for a long time. You had that with CM Punk, where he had that, you know, natural charisma, and he could get away with doing a lot of things that he wanted to do because he's pretty much untouchable because he had that huge fan support. I think it's kind of a case where they don't want to get, you know, they've Randy Orton's burned some bridges within that company with the substance abuse policy that he's done. So I really think they're never going to give him that opportunity. But it's just kind of a, you know, it's just, it's such a machine right now that it's like, you know, how can we judge these people? And you say that he can be the Stone Cold of his generation. I just don't think there's anybody right now that can really be a breakout star because, one, it's so controlled. There's a lack of competition. And then, two, you always have, of course, the big white elephant in the room that I don't like to talk about all the time on this podcast, but it always goes to him. But that's kind of the role that it is right now.
So I think, like, you kind of have to, like, parse words here when you say, like, you don't think anyone can be, like, such a star, or you don't think anyone is allowed to be. I mean, I think there's plenty of guys that can be, and Randy Orton can be.
It's definitely in the latter,
yeah,
allowed to be.
But yeah, I just want to make clear, like, we're not going to come out here and say that. Well, none of these guys have
Randy Orton. I don't know. I mean, that's the whole thing. I don't know if he can be,
right?
Because he's not allowed to. He's not allowed to grow,
right,
and see where he's going to be.
And I mean, I think he's had plenty of times throughout his career where he's shown that, like, yeah, he could be, but like you said. He's been hindered by, you know, the strikes that he's had in their wellness policy, where they wouldn't allow him to be. It seemed like this last year was the most that he's been trusted in quite a while, because they really, you know, he was in most of the major storylines and angles this year. So I think they did lean on him a little bit more than they have in recent years.
Well, he was more of a figurehead in the storylines. You know, like he wrestled, but he was basically like the, you know, he was the opposite of how Triple H is the mouthpiece of Randy Orton. He was like the wrestler. He was the wrestling piece of Triple H. And who are you rooting for here? You're not really rooting for Randy Orton. I just don't know how it is to be a Randy Orton fan. You know, and the funny thing is that Randy Orton, like we talked about a little bit last week, was that when The Rock returned to WWE, he brought me back to start watching it. And then I started watching Randy Orton, and I really got behind Randy Orton because he was making kind of this gray face push. Had some great matches with John Cena, and he was allowed to beat John Cena. And then it's just kind of like, okay, well, he's a babyface now, and this is when they had the whole SmackDown brand, Raw brand, so he was shuffled off to SmackDown, I believe it was, and CM Punk came over to Raw, and then I really started following CM Punk. I know there's a lot more. It's just, being a WWE, I mean, I think this show should be like, what is it to be a WWE fan right now? I mean, what do you have to do to be a WWE fan right now? Because you have guys like Dolph Ziggler, you have guys like Randy Orton, even Damian Sandow to a small part, where you're really enjoying the character that Damian's doing, but you know, somewhere down the line, it's either going to be cut off or turned off, and then what happens after that?
Yeah.
You know, it's like for me, I would much rather see Damian Sandow, I mean, I don't like calling him Damian Mizdow, I would much rather have Damian Sandow be with The Miz for the next year, just because I know he's not going to get squashed somewhere down the line. At least, like, his shtick is working, his gimmick is working. I get to see him again. He, you know, he doesn't wrestle, but he does everything else. And
he still bumps, though.
He does better bumps than The Miz does. But so you have the swell of support from fans. You have people getting behind him, getting behind Dolph Ziggler. But then it's just kind of like the same general malaise of, like, okay, so they're going to come out, they get a big pop, and then nothing's ever going to happen with it. And I don't see a future with Randy Orton. I don't see a future with Dolph Ziggler. I think the only guy that I saw that maybe could break out and really have a firm grasp on everything and to really try to be that next breakout star, where they allow him to be a breakout star, would be a Roman Reigns. And then you have people kind of come and saying, like, well, Roman Reigns can't wrestle. You know, he's this, that, and this. And there's a lot of people on Twitter that are upset that he won it because he's not as good of a wrestler as the other people. It's like, well, is there really wrestling right now? I mean, who are you comparing wrestling to? You can talk about the technical wrestlers, but what technical wrestlers are out there right now? There really isn't anybody that's out there in the first place. I mean, like a Seth Rollins, right? Seth Rollins, great in the ring, but it's like, I don't really look forward to watching a Seth Rollins match just because I'm just kind of waiting for him to cash in or whatever it is. It's just, now that Seth Rollins is, and we can go Seth Rollins too, now that he's kind of in the main event picture, but it's like, it's just, there's no, instead of Seth Rollins really becoming this great character and coming into his own, it's like more storyline based. And he's following the story, and I don't think you're able to grow when you're just kind of following the storyline of what you're supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, and that's true, but that's what happens when you have a champion that and I'm not blaming Brock here, but you have a champion that shows up like once every 3 or 4 months, and your storyline's based on the fact that you're the guy that's supposed to has an opportunity to cash in at any point in time and become the next champion. Well, how are you going to cash in when the guy's never around? And you know, it's pretty easy to kind of read between the lines and see, you know, Lesnar's going to hold that belt till Mania at the very least. So what's the point of having this this briefcase? It's like, at least with the other times, guys that have had it, like Dolph, right? Dolph was a great example. You know, that guy was attempting to cash in twice a week, every single week, once on Raw, once on SmackDown. And, you know, he'd go out there, he'd get his ass kicked. But at least there was some kind of drama, like, hey, is it going to happen this time? Like, I mean, you kind of knew it wasn't going to happen, and especially the longer it played out, you knew they were going to drag this thing around. But at least, like, it was a spot every single show they had where you thought, oh, okay, he's going to come cash in. Let's see what's going on. It's like there's not even any drama about that now because he can't cash it in because Lesnar's never there.
The other thing, too, is people are saying, and there's a lot of people that write about wrestling, and this has been said probably for the past 5-6 years, is that the belt isn't as important as it used to be. You know, because you had territory days, you know, where the belt was the end-all, say-all, and you can bring a champion in, and they can do good business with the top babyface in the territory. And what a lot of people have been saying is like, well, the belt isn't as important as it is anymore. Well, I disagree with that, because with Brock, you know, it's funny to me that you put a belt on someone that isn't there all the time, and you put it on like kind of like a special guest wrestler. And all these storylines, and TLC is like the main thing. It's like you have all these matches that they're trying to sell, but they don't mean anything. I mean, since they're such flash type of rivalries, it doesn't mean anything. And I think the biggest problem I have out of this whole TLC thing is especially like the end of Raw. It's like, let's bring everybody out. You know, let's try to sell some tickets. And there's another problem with that too that I want to get into as well. But kind of like the main problem that I'm having is you have your two best workers in Bray Wyatt and Dean Ambrose. I think they're some of the best all-around performers. I think Seth Rollins is in that category as well. I mean, I think he's great on the mic. He's fun. He's good in the ring. But you have Bray Wyatt and Dean Ambrose, and they're not fighting at all. I mean, all they're doing is just kind of promo after promo. Now, don't get me wrong. I think Bray's great on the mic. I think Dean Ambrose is great on the mic. But when they're talking every single week, and not one of them is fighting. If one of them is fighting the whole time, and just really, you know, winning every match, and every time they win, they either have a ton of fan support, or they have a ton of fan hate. Then you can bring out the guy that he's facing, and if that person's just cutting a promo by himself, then that's fine as long as there's one person in the ring doing all the work. Then there's some kind of build. It's like, well, I want to see this guy win, or I want to see this guy get his ass kicked. But when you have the same Bray Wyatt promo every single time, it's like every single week, it's like he comes out, he has one of the best entrances, he has the best entrance in WWE, but he doesn't do a goddamn thing in the ring. And it's just like, dude, I'm like, I want to either see you fight, but I don't want to see the same promo over and over again. And it's like, you can't have this match that they're kind of, because I think they have all these other matches, but I think like one of the key matches that they really want to build up is Dean Ambrose and Bray Wyatt, which they should. This is the match that you should want to see. But if you don't see this guy in the ring, ring in and ring out, I mean, I can't even watch Saturday morning anymore and watch a squash match. I mean, give me a squash match. Let me just, like, watch the guy and see what the guy can do. It's like, you forget all Dean Ambrose's spots already, you know? Like, Dean Ambrose for a while was hot. He was fighting. His spots in the ring were great. And now you just kind of forget them. And now you're just waiting for the whole pay-per-view when it comes to it. And then at the same time, it's like, just the system itself in terms of the pay-per-view with the WWE Network, I just don't think it works. You know, like, I don't think, like, why do you even need a take-home show now? If you have the WWE Network and you're offering the WWE Network, are you getting buys? I mean, you're not getting buys. And at the same time, and one thing that CM Punk said on the second podcast with Cabana was like, well, people would drop $40-$60 for a pay-per-view. Well, now they only have to pay $10 a month. Where's the money? There's no money. You know, there's no money for a pay-per-view. So this pay-per-view is not even like, wrestlers don't even get paid off for this pay-per-view anymore because they're getting paid the same because everything's based off the WWE Network. And it does...
Don't ask about that, by the way.
Okay, I won't ask about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
When Punk asked about how the payoffs were.
Yeah.
Don't ask about that.
Yeah.
be careful. I don't want you getting in trouble with Vinnie Mac over here.
Yeah, it does.
Your line of questioning.
Yeah. But it's just the whole thing. It's like the build up to a pay per view. This build up has been the same stuff all over again. I do not care about Eric Rowan. I don't care about the Big Show. I really don't care. You know, the whole thing of the number one contender. Does it really matter who's the number one contender between John Cena and Seth Rollins when Seth Rollins has a briefcase? Does that really matter? That doesn't make any sense to me. It's just I'm supposed to watch it because if John Cena loses, he's no longer the number one contender. Who cares? Because you're fighting a guy that has that is pretty much the number one contender whenever he wants to be.
Right. And
so now you're so if he beats John Cena, now Seth Rollins is going to be the number one contender, and he has the money in the bank. It's like, isn't that kind of like overkill right there? It doesn't make sense.
And number one contender to do what? Fight a guy who's never around?
Yeah.
I mean, when would that match even happen? I mean, I'm guessing kind of logically, which is not a really good way to go about things in terms of wrestling, but you're guessing maybe Brock's going to defend the belt at Rumble, perhaps? But, yeah, who... I don't know. It's weird, because what does the number one contendership mean if it's a champion who's never there? And I have no problem with Brock being the champion. But, I mean, you would think that he'd be around every once in a while, especially since, allegedly, he signed a full-time contract like 5-6 months ago. So the other thing, I'll go back to what you were saying about Bray, and I think... the problem really here is it really kind of like highlights what is missing by not having the Wyatt family anymore, because the way that the Bray Wyatt's kind of angles used to be was he would do all those promos, but then he'd send Rowan out to fight, and then you get that match, and that's where I think you're missing, because like a few months ago, if you had an Ambrose Wyatt feud, you'd probably get the exact same type of promos, but then you'd have a match with, like Harper against Ambrose, and then you know maybe there'd be some chicanery, so to speak, around the ring with the other guys getting involved. But now since Bray's on his own, all you're getting is the promo, and then it's a little bit anticlimactic. So I mean, I think that's where a guy like Rowan, a guy like Harper, were really doing well to be around Bray, and then. You're not oversaturating, like seeing Bray all the time, but you're still getting that good mic work. And I think that's kind of where you miss those guys being in a stable together.
So with the state of being a WWE fan right now, so you have the WWE Network. They have a great series called The Monday Night War. And they're pretty much laying out what WCW did to be successful in the beginning. And then they really focus on what WWE did to overtake WCW. And I remember, we were there. I mean, we were watching all this stuff going down, and you and I were big WCW fans because they had the mid-card performers, and then they had a NWO storyline. The one thing that people kind of forget though is that in WCW, the main event for Nitro, the main event for the pay-per-views, were never what you watched. I mean, they were throwaway.
No.
The hell was that? They were that's my Bluetooth speaker. They were always like kind of the throwaway one. They had the big names, but they never produced. And then what WWE did was that they started having like all their matches meant something. Their main events were always better, and so you always watched the main event because you had two performers, and say like whether it was Stone Cold, whether it was The Rock, whether it was Hitman. Whether it was Triple H, DX, or whatever it was, these guys could just work, and their work was in the ring. And the work in the ring extended the storyline, where now, so I'm kind of starting going like, okay, so you knew the formula that worked for you when you guys were getting, like, monster ratings, like 5.7, 5.6. There's some sixes in there, too, that you're getting ratings. Well, how come you're not doing that now? You know, it's like, it's your, everything, you know, it's really complacent. Everything that made you guys successful and really in terms of
shut up, honey.
But everything that worked for them and really made wrestling successful, they're not doing it now. But at the same time, but now they have the show showing you like, well, this is how we became really good, or how when wrestling was at its apex. But they're not following suit. And so like So here's the Monday Night Wars, and I'm watching all these old clips going like, man, I remember all this stuff. I remember watching all this stuff. And then now you turn on the product now, it's like, okay, cool.
I think it's like, this is what we can do if we have to, but we don't have to, so we're just going to give you this vanilla stuff.
So, I mean, what are they, I mean, I just don't, what are they in the business for? I mean, is it just, I don't get it. I mean, it's like, they're not making the product better. They're not making stars out of anybody. It's like, what are they going off of? You know, it's like, they WrestleMania, they're going to wheel out Hulk Hogan. They're going to, you know, Stone Cold will make an appearance. The Rock will make an appearance. I gotta shut this bitch up. She's pissing me off. So I'll let you kind of extol the virtues of what I just said. While I turn this off real fast, and you can go.
I mean, I don't know if
I mean, Big Johnny's not going to make a return, so don't worry.
I don't know if I can extol the virtues of those kind of appearances. And then the other one is more than likely going to be Sting somehow, some way showing up, which is another guy I don't want to see. So, yeah, I mean, I don't understand either. The most you can say is, I mean, they're showing you how they have the ability to put on a really good wrestling show, and they're showing you what they've done to be successful and put out the most entertaining product that they can do. They're chronicling on the network that they have the ability to do this, but then week in and week out, they don't do that. But if they just tell you it's best for business, then you probably should believe it.
So here's the golden question. Here's a 25,000 pyramid question. Why do you watch wrestling right now? Why do you watch it?
I mostly just watch. I guess I'll take you literally here. I watch it for the wrestling, and contrary to what Vince would like you to believe, which is the sports entertainment side of it, which is the part that I'm generally going to fast forward through. I'm mostly watching the guys that I want to see, you know, have good matches. And that's really kind of what it comes down to.
Can you displace, though? I mean, yeah, I understand that you watch it for the wrestling. But with me, when I'm watching it, I'm rooting for my guy that I want to see, like, go to that next level and become a champion and run the company and do that. But the guys that we were watching doing that, I just never feel that they're going to do that. Right. I mean, so you can displace the two. You can, like, put two in a vacuum and go from there?
Well, it's kind of like being an A's fan, you know? It's like, I love baseball, so I want to watch the baseball and I want to cheer for my team. Okay, but ultimately, I know, those guys aren't going to get any kind of sustained push as soon as they get popular. As soon as they start getting over, they're going to get traded for some guy I've never heard of.
When you've had a bad week, or you've had a bad couple of weeks lately.
A decade, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. But all the stuff that went down recently.
Right. And so it's like, but it's almost the same thing. So, like, you know, I resign myself to understand that, you know, a guy like Josh Donaldson is not going to be around, you know, when it's time for him to get paid, right? And wrestling is kind of the same thing. You know, I can watch Dolph Ziggler because I like watching Dolph Ziggler perform. Okay, but, you know, I can't get invested, and it's not anything to do with Dolph, right? It's more to do with what I think WWE Creative is going to do with this guy. And Dolph's not the only one. He's just, like, the first name that came to mind.
So let me ask you then. So because I've been lucky enough to follow wrestlers that have reached the mountain, so to speak, Macho Man being one of them. Chris Benoit, and Chris Benoit was really, like, the guy, like, the second that he made it, I was like, yeah, finally. You really don't have many wrestlers that you've liked that have kind of reached that top level. I mean, maybe like Jericho and CM Punk, right? But I mean, it's like,
I was there with you when Macho Man was getting there. I'd say that of that generation, the guy that I really followed that I didn't get to see reach the mountaintop would have been Steamboat. And, you know, I know he did get there for a brief period of time, but I just didn't, you know, I didn't have cable. So I didn't get to see, you know, when it was happening, all the matches that he had with Ric Flair and stuff like that.
So how does it feel to be you then? You know, I mean, because you weren't a big Flair fan. I mean, it's funny because you talk about the A's, and you're a fan of the A's, and I like the A's too. But at the same time, it's like, I'm a huge Yankees fan, and it wasn't because they were winning and I became a fan. It was kind of like I was born into being a Yankees fan.
Really? Because you know, you're a Red Sox fan.
I was a Red Sox, but then my family kind of put me out in the back and they beat the crap out of me until finally I said I like the Yankees. But that's neither here nor there.
Okay.
But you know, I stepped in. You know, like Flair and the Four Horsemen, they were already at the top when I started watching them. And then I was really able to follow Ric Flair, and then I really started kind of like I really started liking Arn Anderson, probably a little bit more than Flair, and I kind of really rooted for Arn Anderson. Arn Anderson was never going to be anywhere, but the guy was great in the ring. He could cut a great promo at the same time, and so I really started following him. And then you kind of bring in the Pillmans, and you bring in Benoit. They were all the Four Horsemen, and then you know Benoit took off. But you're picking guys that you like, but they never reach the top. I mean, how is it to be you as a wrestling fan? Because you never really, I mean, you had Jericho, and Jericho was the first undisputed champion, but he didn't have like a great championship run, if you really kind of look back on it. But there was a time that he was the top heel, and he was winning all the kind of smaller titles and stuff. I mean, how is it like you don't have like that quintessential wrestler that was like the man for a long time? I think we can take CM Punk and say, okay, you know, we had, you know, a good 434 some odd days of CM Punk being the champion and being the man, and then he extended for another year and a half. But I have like three or four guys or five guys that I've seen reach the top. He probably only had two. So how is it? I mean, you're just like a struggling stride fan, you know, that's never going to see a guy get in.
I mean, well, it's kind of going back to the way you started the topic, right? It's like the belt doesn't quite mean as much, okay? Because and that's the way it is for me, because you know,
for me though, the belt does mean something, especially leading up to this TLC match. I'm trying to say that to me, the belt
right.
does mean something.
Right. Well, I think the belt should mean something, but I mean, if you feel that you have to give it to Cena twice a year, I mean, to me, that's devaluing what it is, just because you want this guy to pass up Ric Flair someday. And in terms of watching the show, I have to, in my mind, you know, understand that the belt doesn't mean much, because if all I cared about was belts, there would really be no reason to watch the show. So I'm mostly watching it to see the guys that I like to see, and you know, more like, you know, almost like watching it as like the art that it is, to just see like, you know, how good can this guy perform. How good can this guy get on the mic, you know, and what direction is this thing going in? To try to, like, hope for wins and losses and things like that, you're really setting yourself up for disappointment in terms of watching wrestling at this point. That said, you know, I'm pretty much like all the guys in the Shield, and I do like Reigns a lot, so I can see that that would be a guy in the near future that is going to get his due and get himself a title run. And even if he doesn't and it ends up being Rollins, I'm going to be pretty happy with that as well. And even if he doesn't and it goes to Ambrose, I'm probably going to be pretty comfortable with that too. So there are a few guys out there that I do think, you know, I really like, but I think are well positioned to kind of make some noise here in the next year or two. And whereas a guy like Ziggler should be and is positioned to, you know, I've had the rug pulled out so many times that I can't get invested. Like, I want to watch Ziggler. Like, Ziggler's, I think everything that he's involved in is good right now. Like, whether it's the way his storyline, even though they're kind of having him be kind of like the guy that's carrying the torch for Cena right now a little bit. Every time you put him in the ring, his matches are good. In the recent months, they've had this guy winning enough to where any match he's in, he actually could win it, or he could lose it. And that makes it interesting for me again. It's like he went through like about an 8-month period where I knew no matter if he was going against the biggest jobber they could come up with, they're just going to figure out a way to make him lose. Kind of like, you know, it's kind of like, you know, to answer your question, it's like the way you cheer for Sandow, right? It's like, you know, the guy's got all the ability in the world, okay, but they're just going to pull the rug out from under him at every opportunity they get. So I'm just kind of taking this Ziggler thing in stride for what it's worth right now. I'm happy. I'm enjoying watching it. Do I think like, oh yeah, this is the run. This is the time they're finally going to give him his chance. No, I don't think that anymore. But I'm just going to enjoy it for what it is as long as the ride lasts. And be happy with that, I guess.
Yeah, it's funny how me and you kind of like the same wrestlers and the same type of aspect, but I think you're more mat-based in terms of why you watch wrestling, where with me, I think I'm more kind of storyline-based, and if that storyline can create a superstar that connects with the fans on all levels, that's what I really look for, and that's why I kind of think that, you know, I like Ziggler a lot, but at the same time, I don't like him as much as I should because of what you just said. It's like you don't think he's ever going to get his extended run, and then you bring up the three guys. Yeah, she's crazy, dude. We have our cat over here, and I don't know. I think she's doing. I wouldn't pet her again because she kind of. There's something about her, dude. Hey, you. Hey, yo. Hey, stop it. get out of here, honey.
Hit the brick, sister.
You better watch out. She's gonna. Hey, just leave her alone. There you go. Okay, good. Problem averted, dude. There's just something about her, dude. So, you know, and you bring up the Shield, and you bring up these three guys that can really go off on their own. I don't see them doing anything until you start taking out the older guys. I mean, no more Brock. No more John Cena. I just think that there's a time right now where I really don't think there's a place for John Cena in wrestling anymore. Just because he can't cut a promo. He can do the job for people, but I don't think he sees anybody right now where he can do the job for anybody. I mean, it's kind of a case where it's like you could bring up Dolph Ziggler, and then you can have him. Because I just always kind of think that, like, him and Dolph are going really well right now. They're getting along, and they have each other's backs and stuff. And I really kind of see it as kind of like a Hulk Hogan, Macho Man thing. But when John Cena squashes someone, Dolph doesn't have enough pull in the back to, like, extend him into either being, like, a top face or a top heel, which Macho Man was able to do. When Macho Man lost the belt to Hogan, he reinvented himself and became the top heel of the company. And, of course, everything happened with Hulk Hogan. He left and everything. But I just, you know, right now, we're just like in a holding pattern. And I still see Cena having 5 more years left in him. And it's just going to be like 5 more years until wrestling is going to get good again. And this isn't the first time that it's happened. I mean, we were the same way with WWF with Hulk Hogan. It's like there was a time where I remember I said, okay, I don't like Hulk Hogan, and nothing's going to change until he's out of the picture. And when he got out of the picture, was wrestling great? Was at its height? No, but they were learning the ropes, and then that, of course, led into Shawn Michaels, led into Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, and then, of course, you had the big Money Night Wars that's never going to happen again. But as of right now, I think we're just in a holding power. They have the depth there, but if you take John Cena out of that equation, all of a sudden these guys are going to be forced to do things, and they're going to have to be forced to play a bigger part in the show, in the company. And it's not going to happen if this guy's still around.
So he's no longer the necessary evil? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I don't think he's been the necessary evil for a long time. Especially if you're going to lose, one of your top guys that everybody was for in a CM Punk because of all the politics that's involved, and he's the main politic guy in terms of we have to protect this guy. I mean, it just really... The funny thing is, it really reminds me of the way WCW was with Hulk Hogan. You know, any promo that anybody cut, any wrestler cut, they had to talk about Hulk Hogan. You know, like, oh, Hulk Hogan, you know, I'm not like Hulk Hogan, you know, I don't turn my back on the fans, this, that, and this. Every storyline involved was revolved around Hulk Hogan, and that's just what it is right now. Everything revolves around Cena, and he doesn't get the job done anymore. It's like, I do not care about John Cena, and I don't care about all these run-ins, and I don't care about you come out, you start the show, and you have your promo, and then you have this main event where everybody comes out, and it's a big squash. I mean, I just don't care about that. But the good news about this whole thing is that there's enough stuff in the middle that I enjoy, and that they are developing that mid-card where, you know, like this past Raw, so any tag team stuff that goes on, It's great. I watch it, which is funny because tag teams were so bad for a while, and there is a resurgence. And you know, you have the Usos, you have Goldust and Stardust, you have the Miz with quote unquote Damian Mizdow, who doesn't do anything. And then I think you also have the Divas division, which I never thought I would say, but I think bringing Flair's daughter out against Natalya. I watched that match, and I was generally entertained by that match. I thought that was Charlotte's like just talking all this trash the whole time, and it's like, wow, like, you know, I'm looking at her going like, you know, like, okay, so now you have someone that maybe can go against AJ, and AJ doesn't have to kind of do her shtick because nobody else can beat AJ on the mic. I think you have a couple divas in place that can do that. I don't think the Bella Twins. I mean, the Bella Twins are who they are. I will watch the Bella Twins because I like watching them, not so much in terms of wrestling, but I like their intro. You know, don't get me wrong on that. But you know, me and you are kind of on different sides of Paige. But I think Paige is one of those performers that can bring something else out, where it's because it's AJ and everybody else. But you have someone like Paige that can create her own little character, whether you like it or not. But you hate her or you love her, but at least you feel one way or the other. I think Charlotte's the next one to come in and really be like a legitimate diva to kind of combat, you know, the whole thing where it's just AJ and everybody else.
Well, I was actually reading this week that AJ might be done after this pay-per-view, which that would really suck for that division. I think Charlotte's a pretty good performer, but I gotta be honest, man. She looks way too much for Flair. That it's kind of awkward, man.
Yeah.
I don't want to be weird, but it's like she looks like, you know how you have this hang up with Tamina and Jimmy Snuka.
Well, that's just because Jimmy Snuka killed the guy.
No, it's because Tamina looks like Jimmy Snuka.
But I came around on Tamina though.
Oh, you know she's a good performer, and I know that Charlotte's a good performer. You know, don't get me wrong. But like, she has not just that her face looks like Rick, but like just her build, like her body type looks like exactly, if you were to imagine what Ric Flair's body type would look like on a woman, that is exactly what it is.
I bet you there's been a lot of fans that have thought that during Ric Flair during his prime, but I wasn't one of them.
I don't know. Maybe Pat Patterson. But
I like the way you walk. I like the way you put together.
I like your scent. Yeah, so that it's a little weird for me, but she's good. Yeah, there's no doubt she's good. I've seen her wrestle Natalya a couple times, and then I've seen her kind of take Emma apart on an NXT. I think she's pretty good. She's definitely got a better figure four than Miz does.
Yeah, but you have a better figure four than Miz, though. Well,
anybody has a better figure four than Miz. But yeah, I think she is more ready to take the next step than the majority of the divas that are on the main roster are right now. So if, in fact, AJ goes, it's going to be very disappointing. And in no way do I think Charlotte can take the spot of AJ right now. I think she would be another competent worker that they could put in there to make the division better. And not even that I ever thought. You know, I didn't think we'd go in this direction on Divas, but since we're bringing it up, where the hell is Tamina? Because Tamina's the best worker they got, basically. That's one thing that's nice too about Charlotte is like she's pretty tall, she's pretty big, like as far as divas go. So physically she's imposing, and you're gonna want to have some kind of competitive situation. I mean, I think you're gonna need someone like Tamina out there for her to go against to at least say, yeah, physically, you know, that other person there is like her equal or better. Right? So I would think that Tamina might be someone that they should probably think about. Doing something with as well, but I've been thinking that for a while, so who knows.
So is it a case, so TNA is pretty much a waste of time. There's nothing that you should be watching in TNA, because it's definitely like a sub-rate show. And I don't think I've watched TNA in 3 or 4 years, and I probably never will, just because I know the leadership on that is pretty bad. I mean, do we have to, like, do a thing between, like, me and you where maybe we watch NXT for like 2 weeks and not watch the main product and see what we kind of... Because I kind of feel like NXT is kind of like what the wrestling that I grew up on, where you just had a ton of guys that have a ton of talent, and they're kind of learning, they're developing their characters, and they're allowed to do it. Whereas Raw, you're not really allowed to develop anything.
I mean, I think there's a little bit of that, and then I think the other thing that makes NXT interesting is you got some guys that have full-on developed characters and have been main eventers worldwide, and they're trying to, like, fit them into the WWE mold, right? You know, guys like Itami and Baylor and like a Sami Zayn, right? You know, these guys are more experienced than 50% of the main roster on WWE, okay, but they gotta tone down and package their thing into something that the WWE is willing to accept on their main roster. You know, there's reasons to watch TNA, but again, this is me.
This liking is, the craft.
Yeah, this yeah. is the difference between how I watch wrestling and how you watch wrestling, right? So I can go ahead and watch TNA and even know, like, that within, like, the context of a bad storyline and an angle that's going nowhere, you know, if it's a couple guys that are really good workers, you know, I can just kind of watch that match and enjoy it. Actually, the one that you might want to take a look at that I started watching, and this goes against most of my better instincts, is so you're on U-verse right now, is that correct?
Yeah.
So you can actually get Lucha Underground on this one of the Spanish channels on a Saturday. So
do I have to listen to the Spanish announcers and stuff? Is the table going to survive? Does the table survive every...
The table does survive.
Okay.
I'd say it's about 75% in Spanish, and then there's parts of it that are in English that then they dub in Spanish underneath. And most of those parts are Johnny Mundo, which is, what's his name?
Johnny Canales?
Nah, Molina's husband. What's his name? Morrison, John Morrison.
Oh, really? So Morrison is...
Yeah.
And isn't is Del Rio with that too or not?
No. Okay. He's like AAA, I believe. But
because I heard Morrison making some rumblings down over there and
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah, so Morrison's in Lucha Underground, and what's that guy? They call him Big Rick now there, but... He was the guy from...
Is he on the fig leaf?
He was the guy from Guyana, the big black dude that was in Nexus and Core.
Oh, yeah.
I forget what they called him in WWE.
He was the one that had the sewer mask on, was it?
No, he's the one that like had like the ridiculous traps.
Oh, the Core.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so he's kind of like their number one heel. And then this actually one of the main reason why I really tuned in was like from you know the kind of guys that we follow on the internet that talk about some of these like lesser known indie stars. One of the bigger guys talked about these days is that guy Ricochet.
Yeah.
So then he wrestles as the luchador Prince Puma in that promotion. So I wanted to see Prince Puma and. You know, not that he's the big draw, but Chavo's in there, and like you know, it's unhampered Chavo, which is pretty decent. Like you know, Chavo can work a good match, and he can do good stuff. Just in the context of WWE, like forcing that guy to be a comedy act, you know, it just comes off as really goofy. But when they just let him be a wrestling character, you know, he's not half bad. So I've been watching it for about the last month. It's decent. I think you should just watch it out for nothing else, just to see the way they present their show. So it's going to be, it is a little tough because it's in Spanish, but they present the whole thing like a telenovela, right? So they got like...
Did someone get hit with a car?
Because
every telenovela, every show, someone gets hit by a car.
I haven't seen anyone get hit with a car yet.
Okay. It's usually like the maid that gets hit by the car or something. Yeah.
I haven't seen any maid, but okay. They do have a... They have a pretty solid looking valet for Mil Muertes that chick she can get it done, but they basically like you know the guy who's the main promoter or the booker has his office and like he'll be sitting there talking to Conan smoking a cigar and they come in and they have like the close up camera angles and I don't know it's just presented like this big soap opera and the way like the ring is presented to you. It's like kind of like the inverse of an Aztec temple, like you have like the ring in the middle and everything kind of like ascends upward. The presentation on the show is pretty decent. I really wish that I could understand Spanish a little bit better to see like how good the storyline is or isn't, I can't really say on that.
But it's followable.
It's followable.
You can follow it. Yeah. Point A, point B, right?
Yeah. You get where they're going with it. I just don't know the details and the nuances of what they're saying.
So I just know there's like this is like a big role reversal for us because
I can't stand luchadors.
No. Because when we first started watching wrestling, you were knee deep in the WWF product, and I was too. I mean, don't get me wrong. But then I started telling you about the Texas promotion with Kerry Von Erich, and then WCW, and then like AWA. I used to watch AWA, and these guys are pretty good. And you're like, forget that. You know, like it's all about WWF and stuff. And now here I am, like the big. I just watched WWF, and I'm like, dude, I'm like, I don't like anything that's going on. And he's like, hey, you should watch this. You should watch that. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not saying that they're great. I mean, I think at the end of the day, of the ones that I've seen, WWE is still the best. But it just serves as a good alternative to see like another way that wrestling can be done, right? And I think that's kind of the thing. Like WWE become so complacent that it's just basically doing what's safe at this point. Just rehashing old stories, just following things that they feel aren't gonna. They're not reaching out and trying to do anything like extraordinary, but they're doing things that are safe, basically.
Well, I just want to say one thing, because I'm not trying to say that I'm watching this product, watching WWE, and just going like, oh man, I hate it. I mean, over the past 2-3 weeks, I've watched it again, I've enjoyed it. But the thing is, whenever it gets closer to a pay-per-view, that's when I kind of start losing interest, which really is not what wrestling should be. It should be leading up to the pay-per-view. I really like it at the day after the pay-per-view is always, to me, is the money show the day after, and maybe the second or third week, and then it's like, oh shit, here we go, we gotta hit this pay-per-view. I know exactly what's gonna happen. You're gonna have a promo in the beginning, you're gonna have squashes at the end, which is really funny because during the whole Monday Night War, WCW was just doing squashes left and right at the end. And WWE was having a person win or a person lose, and telling really great stories. I enjoy the product. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not like probably like when we took that big hiatus. It was very laborious for me to watch it. I mean, I had to watch it. It's like I have to watch it because we got to talk about it for the podcast. So I was like, man, I just don't want to watch this. It's like going to work, dude. It's like, mm-hmm. I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
But I've enjoyed it. It's kind of funny now. It's like, I don't watch it on Monday night, so like I'll watch it like Monday morning, like early in the morning, while my kids are getting ready for school. I can watch it for like 20-30 minutes. It's nice having older kids now because you don't have to do all the stuff for them.
Get themselves ready.
Yeah. So I don't want to kind of come across that, but I think what you're kind of saying, and I think the question that I answered in the beginning, and what we can kind of tell other people is like, okay, start looking at other product. If I need to look at TNA. Maybe I need to start looking at TNA. The underground stuff, that sounds pretty interesting to me, so maybe I'll start watching that. I'm not a big John Morrison fan. I respect what he can do. And I think it's maybe a case where I need to start maybe looking at TNA, because I think TNA is more of my product. Because when I first started watching WWF, it's like, okay, you had your main event guys, but you had all these other guys from different territories come in, and they were established, and they had great characters, or they had great in-ring presence, and they would cut entertaining promos. And it's just down the line. It's like, Hercules, Hernandez, I was a big fan of Outlaw Ron Bass for some reason, you know what I'm saying? So, Billy Jack Haynes, and it's just like these guys that were like spectacles, but then, they were fun to watch. But Hart Foundation on down, British Bulldogs, all this stuff. I can even throw in the Usos now, because now I've really started liking the Usos just because they're an old school type of tag team and they're playing them well. So to answer the own question, I think it's time to kind of not rely and use WWF as a crutch to watch wrestling. I think it's kind of a case where I think NXT for me, I think NXT might be my gateway drug into watching these other places, but I think I'm going to make it more of a focus on NXT. And then maybe we can talk about stuff that we like instead of just kind of talking about the same stuff over and over again. So,
yeah. Well, and this is like a really bad time of the year to be watching wrestling, too, to be honest. Like, they shut it down. They mail it in for the last few weeks of the year. That's why I was trying to explain to my son, because he was surprised that that the TLC pay-per-view was this weekend. And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, they kind of rush through and get it done because the last couple of weeks, all the main people are going to be on vacation. And even this pay-per-view is like, you know, I'm actually kind of looking forward to this pay-per-view. Not that I think it's going to be some spectacular show, but, you know, they're letting Bray Wyatt and Dean Ambrose be a main event. It's the show where...
Is that going to be the main event?
Seems like. I mean, does Cena have a match even?
That's one with him and Rollins.
Oh, yeah. Okay, but at least Rollins is involved in that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, so it's not like your traditional put two big name guys that nobody cares about type of main event pay per view. I think up and down, like the matches, there's like some mid card guy that you're actually kind of liking and hoping for. So I think it could be a sneaky decent pay per view here this Sunday.
So when we started coming back doing this podcast again, we had the major CM Punk thing drop after our first one back. So we had, I felt we had two really strong podcasts. And then, of course, the CM Punk thing I thought was a really easy podcast to do. And now it's kind of like, okay, let's try to figure
back something. Back to talking about wrestling.
Yeah, and let's try to figure out something else. So, you know, I'm glad that at least there's some type of conclusion after this whole thing. And it's not just bagging on guys. I mean, we're finding little, what did Bush used to say, the elder? The 25 or the 20,000 points of light, yeah, whatever it is. So we're seeing some small points of light. So let's go ahead and get into our segments. This is always kind of the most exciting part of our podcast, because if I click on a button and I click the wrong button, then we lose everything. So we've had a good run so far. So hopefully I won't lose stuff, but we'll get into our golden stick right after this, while I kind of cross my fingers and hope that we don't lose everything we just talked about.
Enough of your sob story there, DiBiase. All hail the Outsiders.
You can answer them if you want.
Now, just like everybody here in Michigan, we know that the Einsteiners are really good. But Hall and Nash were better, and these gold belts prove it.
I think the bit name's
Hey, on. DiBiase! This goes out to you, Pumpkinhead! When we said we were NWO for life, we meant it. You must not have understood the for life part, because at this point, you join the Steiners, you're a dead man.
Teddy.
Listen, you two knuckleheads, remember one thing. I know more about you two than anybody else, and they're going to know it when they climb in the ring. You can bet your bottom dollar.
Everybody knows the only reason the Steiners got you is so they have somebody to read the menus when they're on the road.
Well, please, you don't need to throw insults out here, Nash. We're going to find out this Saturday night on pay-per-view in Sturgis. The Steiners colliding head-on and challenging Hall and Nash, the Outsiders, for the WCW Tag Team titles. Ted DiBiase.
I've heard so many really good Scott Hall promos that, like, I mean, that's kind of like a C plus B minus promo as far as Hall is concerned. But that was a nice strong finish there by Nash with the only reason the Steiners have you is so you can read the menus. It's reminiscent of the demolition. I'm not impressed without Mr. Fuji. You couldn't get dressed line
done by who?
By the genius
by
Lanny Poffo.
Here's the other thing with these two guys too, is that they could cut good promos, but like say if I was to put on say like an Arn Anderson promo or a Ric Flair promo, hell even maybe a Hulk Hogan promo when he was Hollywood, CM Punk the same thing, you can listen to it and really enjoy it. Well, with these two guys, it was all about their presence. And they did so many things while they were doing it. Like Hall is just selling everything to no end. Like, just kind of, remember, he used to do the thing with his fingers and, like yeah. he was afraid of him and stuff. So there are so many other elements to it. And I was under the gun because I didn't know if you were going to show up tonight. So I was trying to find something real fast. And I had kind of two promos that I recorded. But I was like, I don't want to do that right now. There's one in particular promo that I'm trying to find that I cannot find. It's one of the best promos ever. And I couldn't find it in the amount of time that you were going to come in. So I was like, oh, well, I always know that Hall and Nash will deliver. So that's why I put that one out there. But, you know, what I liked about this one is that these guys came out. You know, the Steiners were in the ring with DiBiase, and then these outsiders come out. And then just them coming out just by themselves and just, like, the presence they have and all the antics they do just really worked. It's too bad that we can't do video to do at the same time. But these two guys, and there's not a lot of promos on these two guys. I mean, like, yeah, we remember the promos they did, but just what they showed on TV in terms of what they did, when these two guys came out, they were the coolest guys in wrestling, and it never translates really well just doing audio, but, man, they were fun for a long time.
Yeah, because even, like if you were to go to, like, the Is Andre Really Your Dad promo, right? Like, that's a funny line, but, like, the way Hall walks around the ring like Frankenstein, or the way he's, like, tries to mock the Big Show, like, that was, like, the really funny part, right? So, their presence and like, the things that they did, you had to watch it more than hear it to get the good stuff. Because, like, on its own, like, again, that's more like a kind of like a B-minus, C-plus, just straight-up promo. But there's so much more that was entertaining to these guys if you actually saw them perform, so...
Yeah, and they carried that company for a long time. And when they stopped being on the show, or when they would put Hall versus Nash, it's like, I don't want to see Hall versus Nash. I want to see these two guys come out and do what they did in the past.
Yeah.
And it's just like, and they had the most corniest guy in Hulk Hogan that was still giving you the old shtick as a heel. But I really think these two guys really helped out Hogan to be the heel that he became, because Hogan as a heel really wasn't believable. Until I think these two guys took him under his wing, and then he realized what really worked, because Hogan was such a cornball, dude. And I think what really did it for the both of us is when Hogan would lose the belt, and then he would just come out and just cut an insane promo, and he'd start beating everybody up and start attacking everybody from behind and stuff, anything like that. I didn't think anybody was better than that than Hulk Hogan was. But, yeah, these two guys, I mean, it was an era of wrestling, and... they really pushed the button. You know, you want to talk about the Attitude Era. These two guys started the Attitude Era. And I don't care what anybody says. You know, you can look at Stone Cold. You can look at The Rock. The Rock and Stone Cold, great talents, great on the mic. But you need the guys to kind of start, you know, push the button. And then I think a lot of people looked at these two guys, wrestlers, top to bottom, saying, like, these two guys, they're doing something that's never been done. They're making wrestling... mainstream. They're making it cool again to watch. All these college kids started watching it, and I think they learned a lot from just these two guys alone. And you don't have the crotch chops and stuff without these two guys. These guys invented it. And whenever these two guys come out, or whenever they, you know, they bring out the NWO with these three guys, you know exactly what you want to see. And it's funny when these two guys came in the ring, best entrance ever coming walking into the ring. You know, Scott Hall does his thumb to his chest, and he's jumping up and down, like, you know, and then he pushes his arms out and stuff, and then Hall kind of turns around and puts the Wolfpack sign up. Nothing was better than that.
He's throwing the toothpick at the camera.
Yeah, nothing was better than that.
Come out in the Canadian tuxedo.
Yeah,
with the denim vest. So and you know, there's all of that. But then they can back it up with the work, and I think, like, if you want any matches that are going to show it, like their rivalry with Harlem Heat, I thought was one of the better tag team rivalries out there. Harlem Heat was, like, a great team, but especially at that time, they were kind of at their peak. And this was a true, like, when you watch these guys wrestle, you never knew who was going to win the match, right? Like, I mean, you might get, like, inklings here and there, like, through the match, but, like, Hall and Nash could win a title at any given point in time. but they could also lose the title at any point in time. And Harlem Heat was kind of the same way. They had so many title runs, and when they were going at it for the belts with against each other, it was always an interesting match because, you know, anything could happen.
And I don't think people realize how good of a bumper Scott Hall was until he actually faced Stone Cold. When he fought Stone Cold, and he was selling Stone Cold to no end, I think that's... I mean, I always liked Hall, but I didn't realize he was that good of a seller, like, you know, that good of a worker. And he put over Stone Cold to no end with all the bumps that he took. And it's just kind of sad that people never really saw that. It's kind of sad that Hall's arc, you know, right, you know, he was primed and ready to go, but then, of course, he had to toe the company line with making Hogan the number one guy, and was never really had a chance to, like, kind of have that belt and be the top guy. And it wasn't until, like, later on, through probably, like, one of his last matches that you've seen nationwide in WWE where you realize this guy's a great bumper. And it's like, man, what could have been if this guy, you know, had a little bit more kind of direction, you know, and didn't have this crazy contract where he could do whatever he wanted to do, mm-hmm. and let his ego get in the way. So, Golden Stick, we have put in probably about, like, 60 to 70 wrestlers in the Hall of Kayfabe, and now we're just kind of, like, trying to figure out who to put in and this, that, and this. I mean, do you have anybody you want to put in?
I don't have anybody right now.
Okay. So, the guy that I want to put in, I know you've never seen a match with this guy, and I've probably seen maybe 2 or 3 minutes of this guy.
George South.
George South was a great wrestler. But when I say that, I think you can speak on this guy a little bit. But the guy But the guy I want to put in is Bruiser Brody. And what are your thoughts about Bruiser Brody?
I have never seen any Bruiser Brody stuff, my thoughts on the guy was backstage, I think no one wanted to really mess with him, and had a pretty solid career here and in Japan. And that's pretty much what I know about Bruiser Brody.
There's nothing like when you look at a picture of Bruiser Brody, I mean, can you kind of tell, like, what type of wrestler he was? Or, I mean, what's kind of your reaction when you...
I'm thinking of him as, like, another kind of Stan Hansen type, like, just kind of like this big, like, country strong, tough guy. That's pretty much my thoughts on him. I don't know much about Bruiser Brody.
Okay, so should we pick someone else?
I mean, only if you want me to be able to speak on it. But if you want to speak, I mean, I'm not, I mean, I know that he's a fucking legend, man. I mean, I know he's a guy, so.
Yeah.
So I got no problem with him being in the Hall. I just can't say too much about it because I didn't watch it, but.
To compare him to Stan Hansen is pretty much on the mark. But if you take Stan Hansen and make him like a monster heel and make him like a guy that would just do anything and like a hard, like he's Stan Hansen hardcore. He's a hardcore Stan Hansen and a huge star in Japan. I mean, the guy was a bigger star in Japan than he was over here, which is saying something.
Okay, let me ask this then. Was Bruiser Brody the guy that scared the hell out of Lex Luger in the cage match?
Yeah,
was that Bruiser Brody?
You talked about
okay,
that.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's pretty much the extent of what I know. It was like a legitimate badass, and in the ring, he wouldn't take any garbage, especially from some rook, and he scared the shit out of Lex Luger. That's kind of the extent of my Bruiser Brody knowledge.
Yeah, he's one of the toughest guys ever to like be in the ring. Had a monster knee drop as his finisher. I mean, it's just like a crazy knee drop as his finisher. He was physically imposing, but as compared to today's standards, you know, body-wise, just, he had, you know, he didn't have a build or anything like that, but he just, the way he presented himself in the ring, this cat is killing me today, Andy. And, you know, we have the cat messing up our show. We have the Bluetooth lady saying that she's connected or not connected or whatever it is. Just trying to bring me down, trying to bring Bruiser Brody down. But he was physically imposing all the same. I mean, wasn't muscular, but just like a big guy. You know the Berserker, right? So like the Berserker, it's kind of like an homage to the way Bruiser Brody was, without all the stupid antics that
Huff.
Yeah, I mean, but Bruiser did a lot of that too, though. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know how he died, right?
Is he the one that got stabbed in Puerto Rico?
Mm-hmm.
By
El Volano 2 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But but the whole reason why was because this guy was such a huge star in Japan, and in Puerto Rico they wanted him to do a job for someone, and there was Japanese press there. And the guy's like, no, he's like, you're going to kill my earning power. He's like, there's no way a guy like you should beat me, you know, with the Japanese press there, because like I'm like a living legend over there, which he was.
Right.
And of course he gets stabbed in the stomach and stuff, and you know, Puerto Rico goes down the tubes in terms of being a promotion and stuff. So yeah, blame the Puerto Rican scene. So we're at that time. Unless there's anything else you wanna kind of talk about.
That's all I got. I was trying to think of someone on the way over that to go with the haul, but couldn't do it. Iron Sheik's the last pull I got, so maybe next week I can have somebody.
So we got the movies coming up, and me and you guys sit down and kind of put pen to paper and kind of figure it out. I've been watching some matches because I think like the match of the year is one of our big awards, and I'll tell you right now that one of the matches I'm definitely looking at is Bray Wyatt versus Daniel Bryan.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a match that you're thinking about this year, real fast, that you want to talk about that was a good match?
Like right now?
Yeah, like that let's say one of the contenders for match of the year.
So, and I was kind of tweeting this out, but because I saw like WWE's list for the Slammies match of the year, I think the only match on, I think they have like five matches that they put out there. And I think the only one that they actually had as a nominee that's legitimate contender was the Shield versus Evolution. Like that was a great match.
Okay,
so I think that one's up there. Well, I mean, you had the really cool spot where Rollins jumped off the the top of the entrance ramp, like when they were fighting in the within the crowd. It's like they had a lot of like these kind of spots that you'd say, oh yeah, here's the one where they go in the crowd kind of thing when it started. But they really made it cool, like jumping down the stairs, jumping off the entranceway, and it was that really appeared to be like a passing of the torch type of match. Ultimately, it really wasn't because they turned around and killed all the momentum for it the next Monday. But you know, as I saw it at the time, you know, the Shield had a ton of momentum. They were just kind of starting here, like having like a pretty solid face run. And it's like when they had this heel run, it was like, okay, yeah, they were beating everybody, they were staying over. But then you thought, okay, now they're going to be faced, so maybe you know, they're going to have to do the job for Evolution, like most people end up having to do. But for them to be able to come out victorious in that match, you know, I thought that kind of said a lot as well. But the three of those guys as a team were hitting all cylinders. You know, there was a good combination of high spots, and then there was some good work done as well. And I thought the story was good. So, I mean, I thought that was just a great match overall. The other one they had, I don't know that I would put it there, but the Survivor Series match. I don't know if I could say overall it was the match of the year, but Dolph kind of put in the performance of the year or something very close to it with the way that he overcame the three guys at the end, which I really like. But overall, I don't think that's the match of the year.
So
but it's a good match.
To kind of do a little preview before we head out, is Dolph in consideration for Wrestler of the Year?
I think he's a guy that we need to talk about as Wrestler of the Year. That's going to be tough. Wrestler of the Year is going to be tough this year. I don't know that... I don't know that there's any one guy that had like a January to December dominant year. Like, you know, the first 6 months was heavily dominated by Daniel Bryan. Randy Orton was pretty big this year. You know, Roman Reigns had a solid, you know, middle of the year. Bray Wyatt did some really nice things. Ambrose did some nice things. Rollins and... I think these last about maybe two, three months, I think Ziggler has put himself up there with what he's been doing. But, I mean, he still spent the first 9 months of the year just straight jobbing. And though his performance is always great, it's kind of hard to say this guy who lost like 85% of his matches through the first 9 months of the year is Superstar of the Year. But, you know, I got love for Dolph. I mean, if we have something that's like Performance of the Year, like on one single event, like just one performance of the year, you know, I think Dolph might be in the contention for that. But it's going to be a tough road to hoe for him to be the superstar of the year.
All right, so we're at Moodle Skill number 88. Gave you a little preview of what's to come with us. We got Ben Adam Jones over here on Bad News Ramen. We will be back next week. And maybe Wednesday, maybe Thursday might be the night where we start doing it or whatever, just because it leads into Friday and we get more hits on Friday than we would, say, on like a Thursday. So, you know, we have stuff to figure out. And we'll just go from there. So, no catchphrases, nothing at the end.
Just one.
You've kind of taken that one over, so which is totally fine with me.
Well, I liked how you did it, but I can do it also.
Okay, go ahead and do it.
Fake breasts.
There you go. Black and red laces in my number threes. Take a pull up off the wood and let that motherfucker breathe. Sit outside of Buster Crib and let that motherfucker leave. Walk his ass back in and put him on his motherfucking knees. Thug, never taking no for an answer. Might just take a loss, but bitch, I'd rather take my chances. This liquor got me lurking where you live at in the nighttime. 59-50 to the left, but I'm in my right mind. Thug, pants gon' be sagging till I'm 40. Still lyrically sharper than these show bus shows. These phonies ain't gon' throw me in this minstrel show. These labels see how far I've been, they mouth my dick could go. So gone, choke on this meat, throw my song on repeat. Might move away one day, but I'm always gon' belong to the streets. So straight thug, and it feels so good, and it feels so right, yeah, and it feels so good, and it feels so right, cause motherfucker, I'm thugging, selling you the signs of the street rap. Every motherfucking show I do is off the meat rap. I done been in jail and did my best not to repeat that. I'm trying to feed my family, give a fuck about your feedback. Critically acclaimed, but that shit don't mean a thing. When you rocking mics and stealing microwaves, cooking cane, never tricking on the dame. I'm too cold for you broke hoes. Don't let the knob hit your booty when the dough closed, bitch.